Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 7th of November. This hour is a story about, it's a phenomenal story about a refugee. Refugees represent, as one of our guests says this hour, one of the tragic themes in human history. Through the force of fire, disease, war, famine, or economic collapse, they often lose everything in an instant, and the only choices available to them are sometimes as bad as what they are escaping. Our guest, one of our guests, quite a few years ago, was a young child in Liberia, and there was a civil war in Liberia. He came from a family that was merchants, and they were living fairly comfortably, and all of a sudden, everything completely changed. His family was killed. His uncle took him to grassland area, to a forest area where he lived really in the woods for a couple of years, and through a whole long compilation of very many stories and a survival story, he eventually came to Tucson, Arizona. His life coincides with our other guest's life, who was living very comfortably in Tucson, and we'll hear the story of how the two of them met. But Ron Swagger heard Roland's story and said, this is just phenomenal. He spent hours hearing about how this young person left Liberia and how he came to Tucson by the grace of people who are helping refugees come to the United States, and what his life was like here, how he survived, and how he moved to a place that was completely alien. And we're going to hear about this story. It's found in the book Day of the Elephants, a true story of lives lost in Liberia and found in America. And we'll be welcoming your phone calls for both of our guests. We have two guests with us. Roland D. is originally from Liberia and is now living in Tucson, Arizona, and has quite a story you'll be hearing during this hour. Roland, thank you so much for being with us. Hello to you.
Hello, ma'am. Thank you for having me on your show today.
Yes, our great pleasure. And thanks also to Ron Swagger, who is the author of Day of the Elephants. Ron, thank you so much for being with us.
You're very welcome, Kathleen. Thank you for the opportunity. And that was a magnificent lead in that you gave for the book.
Well, it's quite a story, isn't it? And why don't we start, before we go deeply into your story, Roland, of the unlikely meeting of the two of you. I mean, that's quite a story in itself. You were captivated by Roland's story, Ron. How did you hear it?
Well, simply, it was a God thing. I owned a company called Christian Companion Senior Care, which was a non-medical in-home caregiving organization. And on a Friday afternoon, Roland had scheduled a meeting to come in and talk to us about what I thought was a job opportunity. But no one else was in the office but me at that time, because other people were out doing some other duties. So I walked into the lobby shortly after 1 o'clock, and Roland was sitting there. I walked up, sat down on the couch, and I said, so you want to become a caregiver? And Roland's reply kind of startled me. He said, I'm not quite sure why I came in. But as soon as he said that, I turned around to him. I said, I don't recognize your dialect. Where are you from? And he goes, Liberia. And I said, Liberia? I said, how'd you get here? And he says, it's a long story.
It sure was.
And 2 hours later, I was in tears.
Oh, it is such a story. You were a young child in Liberia. We don't know very much about Liberia, I think, in the United States, Roland, or the Civil War that went on for such a long period of time. But if you could, please, just talk about how you, as a young child, lost everything you had because of that Civil War and found yourself, you know, out in the forest living with your uncle. He was trapping animals and everything. You lost everything on that day.
Yeah. I mean, as a child, my family, we were living a very peaceful and successful life until September 12, 1980, when the war broke out to my town in Zwedru. It wasn't an easy time for me. It was a very, very difficult time. You know, as a young boy in the forest with my uncle, and we have to go through a lot of negative things. And it wasn't a good time for me as a child. Yeah.
How much time did you spend literally living outside, living in the wild, because there was no other place for you and your uncle to go?
a couple of years, a couple of 2-3 years in the jungle, looking for refuge, looking for time to cross to Africa, because it wasn't easy. They have all the militias, all the rebel group, and in the forest, you have to, my uncle have to, most of the time when they're threatening him to take me away, because at that time, children are also soldiers, you know, 8, 7, 8 years old, 9, 10, 11 years, all of them have guns. So if you see a guy like Roland, who doesn't have a gun, but my uncle already protected me because he didn't want me to be part of the armed forces. So, yeah, we were in the forest for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Until we crossed the Kavala River to Ivory Coast, where I was living with him until, again, another problem took place. Then my uncle got killed, and I was all on my own.
Oh.
Yeah.
How old were you? You were all by yourself, and you're how old?
Let's say about when my uncle died in June 13, 1995, I was about, let's say, 13 going towards 14.
Mm.
Yeah.
No family and completely on your own.
Yeah, I was on my own living in a refugee camp called Peacetown. We used to live in Peacetown. What happened on June 13, 1995, when the town we were living in called Taiyi in Ivory Coast got attacked, and after the attack, they were hunting Liberian people. Any Liberian man from 10, 11 years old, if you got caught, they will kill you. But I was blessed. I didn't get killed because of my school uniform. I was going to the French school at that time, so I knew how to speak French. Maybe up to that, I graduated from French school. So when I was asked, I would always tell them, one or two times when they asked me, I told them I was in a Liberian, I'm Ivorian, and because of my school uniform on me, a lot of people thought I was Ivorian, so I didn't get killed until I got to the refugee camp where I didn't know anybody.
Oh, my.
You know, except, you know, kids that I used to play with their parents, and the one lady who really used to cook sometimes, give me food.
Oh.
We used to go hang out around with her children and go down to the riverside with my one outfit I have on, watch and wear. Yeah, so it was a difficult time for me. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Difficult time for me during the Liberian Civil Crisis.
Yeah, and when you heard the story, Roland, I know that you were struck by this being an immigrant story, and there are immigrants in this country who perhaps we don't really see as we ought to see. This is an American immigrant story that's a more modern story and incredibly striking, and I wonder how aware we are of these kinds of immigrant stories. I can see why you were captivated.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
No, I was trying. Oh, I'm sorry. I was trying,
trying to get a hold of Ron.
I was trying to talk to Ron. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Ron.
Yeah, Ron's here. Roland's maturity kind of masks and disguises what happened. He was 8 years old on September 12, 1990, when the rebels came into his encampment. The entire family lived there. His grandparents, his aunts and uncles, his parents. And Roland was dressed to go to the private school that he was attending. He was getting a very good education because his parents were very well off. Within a few hours, the rebels came in and just brutally, in a maelstrom of brutal conflict, massacred everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he was forced into the jungle with his uncle at the age of 8. And the survival of that child to go through that and turn out to what he's been today is just an incredible story. When Roland told me the story on that Friday afternoon, I have never written a book before. I've written a lot of marketing plans and business plans, but within 48 hours, I was sitting down at the computer and outlining the story because I knew this story had to be told. It's that incredible.
Yes, it is incredible. And it made you want to tell people about the current immigrant experience, too, didn't it? That there are stories like this. Hard to believe that they exist, but they do exist. And there are people walking around in America who came to this country because they felt that they would be able to live here.
Oh, absolutely. And Roland's mission through this is basically to tell that story,
mm-hmm.
To let the Americans know what is actually going on there. Now, Roland returned to Liberia this past spring.
Oh.
And he visited his family home, which is still in ruins, overgrown by parts of the jungle, recaptured about 1,600 acres that his family owned. And that's part of the ongoing story because Roland wants to help the people back there because they're not living much better than they did back in September of 1990 when the conflict came to their neighborhood and destroyed everything.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about returning. That was the first time you had been back, Roland?
Yes. This year, this gone April, it was the first time I went back since I was 80 years old. And I went back, and it was a sad moment for me. I saw all the destruction that went on, all my family property had been, a lot of people claimed them. But when I went back, our house we used to live in were burned down, and I brought some pictures. Yeah, but, you know, it was, the war wasn't a good thing for us, yeah.
Right.
It wasn't a good thing for us, especially coming to this great land of opportunity, the United States, and you see how people interact with their neighbors, you know, with their friends, how people are caring over here. And when I think back 20 years ago, what happened to Liberia is, you know, sometimes it keeps me very, very, very sad because we are all, you know, bound to live together and to take care of our country. But I think because of misunderstanding, a lot of people got greedy. A lot of people want to be powerful.
Right.
Yeah. It was the first time that I went back.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back. I saw a lot of my people stay in poverty, suffering, you know. So, yeah.
How did you get here? You were all by yourself. You were in a refugee camp. How did the road get paved for you to go to Tucson, Arizona?
It was all, you know, the fact that I'm here today is all a miracle. Yeah, it's all a miracle. What happened is the United States have a program called Resettlement Program.
Right.
And they settle a couple of thousand of refugees around the globe every year. And you have to apply. You have to apply to the program. And when I was back home, I applied to the program. And I got lucky. I was accepted. You know, went through an interview, pre-screening. And the Jewish community of the Southern Arizona, what to do, they send pictures all over and stories. And my story was read by a couple of people and the Jewish community in Southern Arizona accepted my application to sponsor me here to Tucson. So that's how I got here. it was a miracle. That's why Tucson is my home. I love Tucson. I love the people of Tucson.
It was a miracle. We're talking this hour with the young man who is featured in the book, Day of the Elephants, and whose story was so captivating to Ron Swagger, who had never written a book before, that when he sat down and talked to Roland some years ago, he said this was a story that needs to be heard. What is the story of, you know, having something and losing absolutely everything? In coming very close to losing your life as a very young child and having to have nobody have your back and figure out how to stay alive. It's really an amazing story. It's called Day of the Elephants, a true story of lives lost in Liberia and found in America. Ron Swagger is with us. He wrote the book, and Roland is also with us, Roland D., who is the gentleman who was featured in this story. We welcome phone calls, too, if you'd like to ask questions about this experience or talk about the immigrant experience. Yeah, this still remains a country that many think of when they need to start a new life, that they want to get to America. As Ron writes in the book, Roland didn't really want to go to France, even though he spoke French. He wanted to go to America. So we'll ask where he formed his ideas about America. And everything's not always rosy. There were some racial epithets thrown his way and people telling him to go home to Africa, so we'll talk about that as well. And it must be difficult once you have absolutely nothing to come here and find people who are worried essentially about fairly petty things. 800-486-8655 is our number. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome phone calls, 800-486-8655. What do you think, and the book, of course, describes this in some detail, what do you think hearing this story opened your life to that hadn't been a part of your life before you met Roland, Ron?
There was a parallel in both our lives. I went through a period in the mid-90s. I had a heart attack. I had a very successful business and basically lost everything, lost part of my family, my business, my wife, all in a short period of time. And I had to pick myself up again and continue. And as I say in the book, God's got a race for each of us to run. We just need to find that race and continue. It's not a 100-yard dash. It's a marathon. Mm-hmm. And Roland was basically the same way. When I found out that he spent 3 years in the jungle and during that period in the jungle, his life was threatened almost daily, not only by the government troops of Liberia, but by the rebels. He was wearing his red uniform of the school that he was to go to that morning. Those were the only clothes he had. Red happened to be the color of the rebels. So the government troops thought he was a boy soldier because that's who the rebels recruited during that period of time.
Right.
They were merciless fighters. So they threatened his life many a times, and that, quite frankly, that's how he got across the Kavala River to the Ivory Coast, because his uncle Paul, who was his only guardian during that period of time, overheard the rebels. A friend of hers, of Paul's, overheard the rebels saying they were coming back. Not the rebels, but the government troops coming back the next day to kill Roland. So they wrapped him in a mattress and literally carried him across the river to the Ivory Coast.
Goodness. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's so many facets of the story where you just totally captivated by everything that he went through.
Right.
And succeeded. Today he's a pharmacy tech at one of our leading hospitals here in Tucson.
That's remarkable.
He's such an overachiever. It's amazing.
Why America? You spoke French pretty fluently. Why didn't you go to France? What was the dream of America, Roland?
I enjoyed, you know, as a kid, Liberia is a pro-American country. You know, as a kid, we learned a lot about America, and now we spoke English in Liberia. So, and when we're on the refugee camp, a lot of American people, a lot of good people, used to leave from here, come to the refugee camp with, you know, clothing, you know, programs.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time on the bag of rice we used to receive on the refugee camp, always the United States of America. And, I mean, I just have that good feelings about America, that this is the country I already want to go to one day. And secondly, when the 9/11 took place, even though it was after, you know, I was adopted now by a Cameron Bullet, but when the 9/11 took place, I came from school. And when I got from school, the television went on, and I saw people, you know, people jumping from the buildings, from the skyscrapers.
Yes.
So I thought it was a movie. So I started watching, and later on, you know, in French, they start saying, direct from the United States, terrorist attack. And I started crying. You know, I started crying. I'm like, why such a thing should happen to the United States? But I have a couple of friends that were laughing. They were like, really? You're not even American. Why are you crying? Why are you crying for the American people? I said, I'm crying because I know how tough time is. No, people are going through a lot of difficulties. And I'm a human. Even though I'm in the United States, I'm here in Africa. But they are human, like me. So, you know, I just, when this opportunity came for resettlement in another country, Canada, Australia, you know, New Zealand, I just wanted to come to America. And I think my prayer, my wish as well, was accepted by God. That's why I always say it's a miracle.
Let's welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Ann in Platteville. Hi.
Hi. I'm very touched by Roland's story. I do know that there are other refugees or immigrants from Liberia in the United States, and I wonder if you, Roland, have been able to be in contact with them.
Well, this is quite a dramatic story. I guess we can tell you. Yeah, you were, weren't you, Roland?
Can you say that again?
Were you in touch with other Liberian refugees? There was one who was crucial in your life.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of us here in the States, and they have organizations, but I'm not really part of the organizations because when I got here, I was all by myself, and then I really wanted to relocate my parents. So after I relocated my parents, I was working two jobs and have to help my parents back home, have to make sure I get my parents over. Yeah, but there's a lot of refugees here in the States, in Minnesota, in Philadelphia, New York, you know, a lot of places here in D.C., you know, and maybe in Wisconsin, in Madison. I think they have a little community in Madison, Wisconsin, Milwaukee, somewhere around there.
Yes, there is certainly in Madison and probably in Milwaukee, too. And tell the story. You can tell it, Ron. People can read it in the book as well. But the way that he was reunited, he thought his entire family was dead, and it was a Liberian refugee who became his friend who was the only person. I mean, he had to meet that person in order to find out that his parents were still alive. It's an amazing story.
It absolutely is. Well, Roland began going to for schooling for his education in pharmacy. He met another Liberian boy who was sending money back to his parents in a refugee camp in the Ivory Coast. And Roland decided to participate and help them out. So Roland gave some money every month to this boy so he could send it back to his parents. And his parents wondered where his friend Angelo was getting the money from. And they asked, and he said, well, my friend here, Roland D., is contributing because he has no family left. He's an orphan. And so he began sending money back, and the boy's parents wanted to thank Roland. And they asked for Roland to get on a telephone one day, and the woman said to thank him, and basically started asking questions. You know, what is your tribal name? He said Bella. What town were you from? Zoandra, and started asking questions, various questions, and said, what is your name now, Dee? And when she said Bella, she goes, what was your mother's name? And he gave it, and Rebecca. And she says, is your father's name Brown? And he says, yes. And she says, your parents aren't dead. They're living with us.
Isn't that an incredible story? Oh, my goodness. And so you wound up bringing your parents here and to Tucson, and you hadn't seen them in how long, Roland?
My parents, I've been seeing my parents since from September 12, 1990 to September 11, 2009.
Wow.
So roughly around 19 years, I've been seeing my parents. And, you know, it was a little bit amazing. You know, I'm a strong believer in Christ. Yeah, I'm a very, very, very strong believer. It's like a coincidence to me why I should stop seeing my parents in September, and this shows up. I stop like a day before we split. It was September 12th that I stopped seeing in 1990, and my first time laying my eye on him September 11th, 2009.
Hmm. Hmm.
So I'm like, it's all God and miracle.
Hmm. Let's go to Ann. Thank you very much for the call. Abdul in Waukesha. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, my name is Abdul. I am just so thankful for the show. I am from Sierra Leone, which borders with Liberia. The Liberian war spilled over to Sierra Leone and lasted for 10 years.
Mm.
I went through similar situation like Laureline for 10 years. But thank God I'm lucky I found an American girlfriend, and now I'm living in the U.S. with my wife with a child. So I'm just so thankful for you guys airing this show, for people to know around the world that this kind of situation go through in Africa, and people can be very, very lucky to find themselves living today, because there are situations wherein you find yourself maybe in front of rebels, the fighting guys that will be killing either your parents or your friends right in front of you. So for anyone to live to tell the story is heartbreaking.
Yep.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Abdul, very much for the call. I don't think we hear very many of these stories of the new immigrants. We complain about immigrants more in these days, Ron, and these stories are just, the American dream is alive and well. Thank you for people who desperately need America, or they need a place to stay alive, right?
Absolutely. What you were referring to is the processing of the immigrants, and you know, there's two ways, and that's under tremendous discussion within our Congress, the halls of Congress right now. But yes, the immigration is alive and well. The American dream is alive and well. You know, as you had mentioned earlier, Roland speaks many languages. One of them is French. He could have gotten to France. He could have gotten to any country, but his desire was come to America because that was the dream of the people in Liberia, and his dream of from his education. At 8 years old, he had already had it implanted in his mind that America was the place to come to.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Abdul, for your call. Kathleen in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi, Kathleen. I'm a retired teacher, and before I retired, I helped develop a unit of study for my school that we wanted to foster empathy, and we called it Wants and Needs. And so we would read books to the kids on different scenarios, and when they started out believing why people were poor, although we didn't use the term poor, we used tight times, people having tight times, they would say, oh, they were lazy or something that they might have heard their parents say or heard somewhere. But as we read more and more books and we kept a list of what we learned that people became had difficulties because of a loss of job, a death in the family, perhaps there was a fire, and at that time there was a hurricane, and a lot of people had their lives torn apart by that. And they began to realize it was not such a simple thing as someone just not wanting to work. It was a lot more complex. And one of the books, and we did this, we fostered this through picture books. And one of the books that we previewed as a committee when we were setting it up for the older kids was a book called The Lost Boys of Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about boys who were in a country that was war-torn, and they were escaping on their own. And as they escaped, they ended up in a refugee camp, and they were befriended by some good volunteer who was able to help them come to America. And it talks about the struggles that they had while they were in that country, and it just said that without these volunteers, it would be very difficult for these people to come, because on their behalf they were able to come to the United States, and said that it was actually, for some of them, was very, very successful to be coming to the United States. They moved everywhere from Atlanta, Georgia, all the way up to Fargo, North Dakota. But they still need volunteers, because once they came here, they sometimes get lost in the system and they don't have adequate employment, or they have difficulty getting medical and psychological access. But I just thought it was an interesting story that I've been hearing on the radio, and it was so similar to the book that I had read, that with kids being older, they would understand that another reason why people have difficulties in our country is because maybe they were in a situation such as a refugee camp
right.
in a warring country
mm-hmm.
that caused them to leave there and come here and start over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't think of that very often, do we? And you really needed, Roland, in order to survive, you needed people to just to help you in every possible way, to help you get food and clothing and everything, right? Because you needed to rely on strangers.
Exactly, exactly. I already said thanks to the lady who just spoke into Abdu also. Abdu, he's from Sierra Leone. Yeah, we both have the same. Our country have went through difficult times. It is true, you know, as a refugee, you don't have any means of income. You don't have anything. You depend on the United Nations or the United States to send food. Like, I will turn around. Sometimes I'll go 2-3 days without eating.
Mm.
I will just drink from the creek and just drink from the creek. It's not clean water or eat whatsoever. I know animals can eat in the bush and they survive. So when we come here, you know, we really need help from people, and we really appreciate it coming here. This country, that's why I pray every day for God to bless the United States of America, because they're the only people who always go to people rescue.
Mm-hmm.
Being a refugee is a bad situation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness, I can imagine. And I would imagine, Ron, that the road hasn't always been easy for Roland. Obviously, we're a country where not everybody is gracious, and it's interesting that you took an interest to him because you heard him and you wondered where he was from. Our lives tend to be so busy that sometimes we don't see other people.
Well, Roland's personality overcomes a lot of that, too. He's very, very likable. Some of the things that happened to Roland when he first entered America were just amazing. A few days after arriving, he went to the people at the Jewish Family and Children's Services were missioned to find him employment. So they took him to a place called Canyon Ranch, which is a very high-class spa,
mm-hmm.
worldwide spa located here in Tucson. And Roland was hired to be a caretaker of the property. And as they're walking through the lobby, he overheard a conversation at the front desk. And there were two couples from France who spoke only French, and the person behind the counter didn't speak French. As they were passing by, Roland interjected and said, "Can I help you?" in French and resolve the problem. Those people hired him immediately. He's only been in the country for a few days. Hired him immediately to take him around and be their interpreter while in Tucson. And the manager of Canyon Ranch hired Roland immediately to be a bellman out front to greet the people with various dialects. So, and Roland speaks many languages. So as soon as that happened, he became employed there. But within a few days of that, the Tucson Unified School District, which is Tucson's largest school district, hired Roland to be an interpreter because there were so many refugees coming from Liberia, and not all of them were educated like Roland. So they needed interpreters. They hired Roland to be an interpreter.
Mm.
That's where he first acquired sufficient funds to be able to continue his schooling and become a pharmacy tech.
Mm. And that's what you're doing now? You're in pharmacy, Roland?
Can you say that again?
What are you doing now?
Oh, right now I work for the University of Arizona Health Center, which is one of the best hospitals here in town, as a pharmacy technician.
Uh-huh.
Because my dream was I always want to go to pharmacy school. So a few days ago, I was looking at some pharmacy schools in Wisconsin, in Madison.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, they have a very, very nice pharmacy school program over there. And I was looking at it. And I didn't even know this interview was going to be a radio station in Wisconsin.
Oh.
So I was looking at it. I was just looking around because I want to get in by next year, into pharmacy school, because I'm done with my prereq right now, so I'm good. So I was just looking around. But right now I'm working as a pharmacy technician at a hospital,
uh-huh.
Inpatient pharmacy.
Yeah. Thanks, Kathleen, for the call. We have some lines open if you'd like to join our conversation. Our number is 800 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. We're talking with the author of Day of the Elephants, A True Story of Lives Lost in Liberia and Found in America. Ron Swagger is with us, and the young man who is the focus of the book, his phenomenal story is told in this book by Ron, who had never written a book before, but was so struck by Roland D's story that he said, I got to write about this. And so he did. Let's go to Lois in Milwaukee. Hello, Lois.
Good afternoon. I lived in Liberia, and I'm wondering where this young man came from and what tribe he's from.
Oh, I'm from the southeastern region, Zwedru. I'm from the Crown ethnic group. Yeah.
I worked at a hospital out there, which was completely destroyed during the war. None of the buildings were left standing. They've been rebuilt,
JFK Hospital?
JFK?
I was at Ganta.
Oh, you're in Ganta?
Yeah.
Okay, Ganta, yeah. Ganta is a city before Zwedru. But, when I left for Liberia in April, I have to, you know, over there they don't have better roads. So we stopped in Ganta for a couple of hours and went, yeah. So, but I don't really know the hospital, yeah, because I was 8 when I left from Liberia, so I don't really. I know Zwedru, where I went recently, then Monrovia, where I was for 2 weeks, you know, just looking around and see how things were described. So.
How did you happen to go there, Lois?
I was a missionary, and I was teaching at the School of Nursing.
I see. All right, thank you very much for calling. We'll take more phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is our number. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ron, you write in the book that perhaps this country needs to see itself through the eyes of immigrants, that Roland is astonished at the breadth and depth of stress in America, incredulous that Americans need medication to get them through their working days, wonders why girlfriend stuff, problems at work, and debt could possibly drive people into stress.
It's such an irony. And when Roland first related this story to me, I was almost on the floor in hysterics, because he was talking about some friends that he met at the university while he was attending school, and they were so stressed out because of their girlfriend or car problems, and Roland's standing there scratching his head and goes, you've never been in the jungle. You've never been faced with the wild animals and the poisonous snakes and spiders and had to sleep on the grass and wondering if it was going to rain that night, if you were going to be cold or warm. Or Americans are out of touch with reality in almost every phase of our lives right now. And it's a shame.
And you faced your own health problems, serious health problems as well. But has he taught you in some ways to not sweat the small stuff?
You never major in the minors. And everything in life is really a minor. What happens today is yesterday, tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So, what seems insurmountable today is just a little molehill.
Mm-hmm. What gives you stress these days? Anything, Roland, or are you stress-free, sir?
Yeah, I'm not stressful.
Right.
You know, I went through a lot. If I have to have all the memory in the back of my head, I mean, I would be in a psych unit. So, whenever you're blessed like this and God bring you to this far, you need to relate your past to people so they can be able to understand that. It's not just, I don't have money today, or, you know, I lost my job, so I should go and take a gun and shoot myself in the head. No. You have to have a positive life of living so you can be able to come over some other situation. So, yeah, I'm stress-free.
Good.
Yeah.
Let's go to Brent. I'm sorry, go ahead.
My priority is how to help other people to be stress-free.
Right.
Like up here in the state, back home in Liberia, we got, you know, some people still go, even though there's no war, but some people still going through tough times, they need help. And since I am blessed, and you know, I'm not in the sad world. I should be able to, you know, have a positive attitude and go to help people who need help.
Brendan in Madison, hi.
Hi. Thanks for the conversation. I served as a Peace Corps volunteer in the Gambia in West Africa, which obviously isn't right next to Liberia, but I'm a graduate student in Madison now, and I've done a lot of reading about Liberia, and it's definitely amazing, everything Roland had to go through, and I really, you know, my condolences for the horrible situation,
Thank you.
Congratulations on everything turning out and so much better. But I guess I had some questions about, for Ron, about how much research into kind of the conditions that caused the war in Liberia, because, you know, a lot of our history with Liberia has, of course, been so complicated as well. You know, there's some kind of neo-colonialist policies and stuff, and I wondered if maybe some ideas or recommendations for bigger picture kind of policy things that the United States could do to improve the situation of Liberia, to improve trade and these types of things, and how much that plays into your book.
From a causal standpoint, it plays a great deal, because that's the reason Roland's in the country today. Liberia has its roots back in the early 1800s as a repatriation of slaves back to Africa. But I think Roland can better answer that question than I can, because Roland has become a political authority on Liberia and what is going on there. I did some basic research because I was really unfamiliar with Liberia. But Roland, do you want to answer that question? Hello, Roland.
Roland, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you answer that?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, actually, I hear you talking about neocolonialism. Yeah, it's true. You know, our leaders, Liberia have a very strong tie. I can say Liberia, if we come to focus, Liberia should be the number one partner of the United States, maybe after Great Britain. Okay, Liberia believes so much in the U.S. All our government officials, 99% of them went to school here.
Oh,
Harvard,
my.
Georgia Tech.
Oh.
You know, maybe some of them went to Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
Some of them went to Florida University. So 99% of them was educated here. But the problem we have in Liberia is greed and corruption. Greed and corruption led the country to the civil war, because people want to be more powerful, still embezzle the country money, nepotism, put their own family members in cabinet positions, and the people in the rural area, like where I'm from, suffer. My parents wasn't in government. My parents were business people. That was the only thing, that I was going to private school because they were paying my school with their own money, not government money.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing the U.S. can do to help out Liberia is control the economic in Liberia and control our leaders. Make sure they give account. Accountability is the number one thing. The official in Liberia need to give. They need to give account to their own people and give account to those people they're getting the money from, like the World Bank, the IMF, all those people. Until that, Liberia will always be where Liberia is. I went there recently. Liberia is one of the poorest countries in the world, 3.5 million people. But I don't think a person in Liberia have a dollar a day to survive. You know, when I was in Liberia, this lady, because of $50, or someone say, I came in Torah, the lady was crying, the guy was dying.
Mm.
And I asked, what can we do? She said, I don't have money to take him to the hospital. If I take him to the hospital, there is no money for treatment, and he would die.
Mm.
So I don't know how to do it. I'm like, how much you need?
she needs $3,700 Liberian dollars, less than $50 U.S. Okay? And I went and gave her the money. I said, we need to take him to the hospital. And that guy survived. Up to now, the lady always called me, you, Roland, thank you. I'm like, you know what? It's, you don't have to. That's what we need to do to each other. But I think Liberia need a lot of help from the United States. For the person who asked the question, need a lot of help. Some of us, we're willing to go back to help our people.
Brendan, you have something else?
Hello?
Yeah, if you have another question or a response, that would be fine.
No, I mean, I guess I think that it certainly is, like you're saying, I think that corruption is a big issue in certainly in Gambia, where I lived, and a lot of the Liberians and Sierra Leoneans I met talked about the same kind of issues. I guess I just, I appreciate your perspective, and once again, thank you for your story.
Yeah, thank you so much, Brendan, for your call. And why did you do this story? You said it's the first book you've ever written, Ron. Why did you write it? What do you hope will happen as a result of this?
Well, I just felt that Roland's story needed to be told. I think the book has wonderful criteria for a movie. The war footage that we've put onto a website. YouTube video as the book trailer. It's exciting. It has all the emotion. It touches every emotion that you could have. It's just remarkable. it's a tearjerker. I mean, when you go through it and just read of his experiences and what his life has evolved to, and what his, you know, Roland's only 32 years old. So he's got a full life in front of him, and can make such a difference for Liberia and the Liberian refugees who have repatriated to this country, who are now citizens. I mean, Roland, just about a year ago this time, walked into my office with a smile from ear to ear, and he was holding up his U.S. citizenship paper, which is one of the greatest moments of his life, and I could just see that in his face. There's so many elements in the book which just touched me, and I thought his story needed to be told.
And do you feel a mission, Roland, to, let's take both fronts here, to help Liberian refugees in the United States? If so, in what way? And also to help, which is a larger issue, Liberia, your homeland?
Yeah. Actually, I think when I look at my life, because I have the thing about a lot of people helped me in the past. This is time for me to help people too. When I first got here, my agency that sponsored me to the state, I started working for them too, helping Liberian, Sudanese, people from Burundi, and other refugees that spoke French, to have them resettle here into the state, because what they did, the training verse has. You know, they always like, oh, he's smart, he can do it. So they trained me very fast, got me a driver license, so I used to pick up the van and pick up people from the airport, set up an apartment for them, social security department, and, help them reintegrate into the society, tell them how America is, you have to get a job, so to sustain yourself, you have to take care of your children here, you don't just get back. So we go for workshops. So I did a lot of things like that. And coming down to say to how to help Liberia, I'm willing. That's my dream. That's what I want to do. If I have the means of going back home to help my people, I will do that. I will do that. Because Liberia had their independence in 1847. Liberia is one of the oldest African nations after Ethiopia. But Liberia today, Liberia among the poorest nation in the world. We have all resources. We have gold, diamond, oil, timber. We have everything. But where did the money go? The money go into our leaders' pocket. They invest the money, bring the money here, take it to the Swiss bank, take it all over. And our people live in poverty. We don't even have clean waters. We don't even have clean bathrooms. We don't, you know, it's a chaos. You know, some of us, I'm saying this today. Some people will be like, oh, but promise, trust me, go to Liberia. And you will see what's going on.
And you want to change it. We're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. Ron, thank you very much for being with us. The book is Day of the Elephants, A True Story of Lives Lost in Liberia and Found in America. Ron Swagger, the author, and Roland D., the featured subject. Thanks to KP Whaley and Robin Cherry for producing.